Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Every week at this time, Canada Dry supplies you with a quartet. It can't sing, which is one thing in its favor, but it can answer questions, sometimes. Here's how we work it. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions per letter. If your question is used, you receive $5, and $10 additional if it stumps the board. So you may win $15 in all. Don't get gray hairs if our editorial staff changes or edits your questions slightly. All questions become the property of Information Please. Letters with questions are to be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now here's our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Ladies and gentlemen, on this evening's Go As You Please, an unrehearsed program, the following Board of Authorities will do their darndest for dear old Canada Dry. First, our end man, Franklin P. Adams, columnist of the New York Post. Second, the amazing John Kieran, now firmly established as an expert on bugle calls, in addition to sports and practically everything else. The widely known author, critic, and radio commentator, Mr. Gilbert Seldes. And, to lend a note of charm to the Board of Experts, a young lady known as the author of the bestseller, Fashion is Spinach, the famous dress designer, Elizabeth Hawes. There they sit, opposite me, as nice a little collection of brain cells as you're apt to see in a month of Information Please programs. Now, if the brain cells miss out on a question, Canada Dry's cash register, ring out, Wild Bill, will pay $10 to the lucky questioner. Now, Miss Hawes and gentlemen, get ready for a hot one right over the plate. This one comes from Mr. Clarence J. Brandt of Brooklyn, New York. Mr. Kieran, you'd admit that in tennis, you can serve without any eating being done, won't you?
Yes.
All right. Now, in what games or sports can you do the following? First, jump while sitting. Mr. Seltz.
Chess.
Chess.
Or checkers.
Or checkers. Not leapfrog, of course. That's one. In what game or sport can you crawl while off the ground? Mr. Adams.
Swimming.
Swimming, very good. Anyone have another answer? Three. Faint while conscious. Mr. Kieran.
Boxing.
Boxing, very good. Couldn't catch you on that one, could I, Mr. Kieran? Right. Four. Split without breaking. Split without breaking, Miss Hawes.
Dance.
I beg pardon?
Dancing. Is it not a split?
Yes, I hadn't thought of it. Split without, of course, dancing, quite true. Sometimes get the opposite impression, as if they were going to break in half, but they don't. There's still another. Mr. Kieran.
Bowling.
Yes, bowling. Very good. What is a split in bowling, Mr. Kieran?
Well, I don't know much about bowling, but it's when you do not knock them all down.
Yes, you knock the center pins down. There are usually two left, one at either
That's
end.
Right.
It's very difficult to get them.
That's right.
And five and last, pass without moving. Pass without moving. Miss Hawes.
Bridge.
Bridge. One other game, Miss Hawes, if you might not be apt to know. Yes, that game you play. Mr. Adams' game.
Remember. Poker.
Yeah. Mr. Adams always likes to get in the plug for his favorite game. Don't look at your watch, Mr. Adams. You have another half hour before you can get to the Thanatopsis Club. Second question. This comes from Mr. J.B. Henry of Seattle, Washington. Now, this is about American presidents. There are three parts to the question. First, what American declined the presidential nomination with a telegram saying, I will not accept if nominated and will not serve if elected? Mr. Kieran has his hand up again.
Did you say what American president?
What American? I beg your pardon.
Oh,
what American declined the presidential nomination? Mr. Kieran.
William Tecumseh Sherman.
Yes. Also the author of the famous phrase about war being disagreeable.
That's right.
Two. Name the Republican who was elected president because of a split. There's that split again. Because of a split in the Democratic Party. And a Democrat who won the presidency because of a split in the Republican Party. You have to answer both parts. Did you have your hand up, Mr. Seldes?
I got the second half so easy.
You have to answer both those
the
parts.
The same person must answer
That's
both.
Right. That's Mr. right. Mr. Kieran? Mr. Kieran.
Well, a Democrat who was elected because of a split in the Republican Party might be President Wilson.
Yes, it not only might be, but it was. President Woodrow Wilson.
Well, it might have been another, too. Now, the,
not at the time.
Democrat who was elected.
No, the Republican who
the
was
Republican
elected president.
The Republican who was.
Want to think on that one? Oh, no. Mr. Kieran has to get that all by himself. I'm sorry. I'll give you another 3 seconds, Mr. Kieran. If you don't think that'll be too tedious
for
you.
I was going to give you another Democrat.
No, I'm sorry. The proper answer is Mr.
Rutherford Hayes.
Abraham Lincoln.
Rutherford Hayes?
Mm-hmm.
Rutherford Hayes. Is he coming up at this late date, Mr. Adams?
Mm-hmm.
No. The answer is Abraham Lincoln. Yes, that was the split in the Democratic Party. But I'm afraid that Mr. Kieran, having adventured on that rather rashly, may quite conceivably lose $10 for Canada Dry. Let's see. The third and last, what presidential candidate pledged, if elected, to get us into war? That's an interesting question. What presidential candidate pledged, if elected, to get us into war? Don't know? The answer is James Madison in 1812. He was elected on his express agreement to declare war against Great Britain, and did so. Well, that, I'm afraid, is going to cost Canada Dry $10 going out to Mr. Henry of Seattle, Washington. Thank you. See what you can do with the next one. Comes from Boston, Massachusetts, from Miss A.K. Halbrook. This involves knowing something about wearing apparel. Not current wearing apparel, Miss Hawes, who looked relieved for a moment, but wearing apparel that's now obsolete. Name five articles of wearing apparel in vogue early in the century, that's this century, but now practically obsolete. Name five articles. Used to be very fashionable around 1900. You go back as far as 1900, Mr. Kieran? The expert on sports will give us... All right, Mr. Kieran.
Men's nightshirts.
Men's nightshirts. Are they worn at all, Miss Hawes? Would you know?
Yes, definitely.
They're worn definitely.
Oh, they're very
I've always thought
style.
That was the way they were worn. I don't
in
think I
style.
Men's
oh, certainly.
Don't quarrel, Mr. Adams.
I didn't know anything else was in
I
style.
I can mention the name of a place you can buy them if you like.
I know.
Mr. Adams, do you wear a nightshirt?
I do, if you must know, yes.
I must know, yes. Very well, I won't accept your answer, Mr. Kieran. Maybe obsolete for you, Mr. Kieran, but not for Mr. Adams. Good a man as you any day. Mr. Selden.
Bicycle bloomers.
I never knew bicycles wore bloomers.
Bicycle bloomers. Bloomers worn when
bicycle
cycling.
Bloomers. Would they be obsolete, Miss Hawes?
Yes, definitely.
Very good. They're definitely obsolete. Bicycle bloomers is the first album. Let's have four more. Mr. You want to come back into this, Mr. Kieran? All right. Smack into the game.
Those side saddle suits the girls used to wear when riding.
No, they're not
obsolete. They're not obsolete.
Where do you find these things?
Now, look,
you don't associate with the people I know.
Horn horses. He'll tell you where you can find those side saddle suits. Mr. Sellers.
The watch, which I think was called Shetland, was pinned right on here.
Is that right, Miss Hawes?
You can still wear those.
Yes,
but you don't.
Definitely, they're very modern.
Shetland watches.
Fun.
I think
no, they're modern
terrible.
Ones. They have look modern
here,
ones.
Miss Hawes, will you get into this game and tell us the answer?
No, I'd rather just more fun.
Mr. Adams.
Congress shoes.
Congress shoes. Oh, they're certainly obsolete.
Congressmen wear them.
Well, they're obsolete, too, often. I think that would pass. Congress shoes. Those are too legitimate.
What's a bustle in them?
A bustle.
I suggest a bustle.
What is a bustle? I've always wanted to know.
A bustle is something that you would pin to your rear
not
end.
Me, not me, not me.
Have your dress.
Yes. What was the purpose of it, Miss Hawes?
It was for the very simple purpose of making your dress stick out further than it might otherwise.
But why is that a good thing?
Why is any fashion a good thing?
Yes,
you have me there.
All right, Mr. Adams is puzzled. That gets us down to three. Two more. Two more articles of clothing. Now obsolete. Well, I can think of one that I'm
pretty
sure.
The mittens with the...
Mr. Kieran.
Overalls.
Oh, rock.
Shame.
Well, now. People do wear overalls. They do wear overalls. Mr. Sellers.
How about these little mitts, I think they're called, with the fingers not on, just up to there?
Oh, you wear them when you play marbles.
Who?
I've seen little fellows... playing marbles with those mitts without any fingers on the end. That's perfectly
do you know anybody that wears a helmet or a casket now or carries a spear?
Fireman. Miss Hawes.
Long-sleeved bathing suits.
Long-sleeved bathing suits. Yes, they're certainly obsolete, I'm glad to say. That's four. One more. Mr. Adams?
The Inverness cape.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
You should go to Westport, Connecticut.
I think that's pretty bad. How about Miss Hawes?
Boned collars for women.
I beg pardon?
Boned collars.
Boned collars?
Yeah.
Never heard of them.
Mm. High collars with bones.
With bones in them? Live human bones?
Whale bones.
Whale.
Really? Well, that makes five, but we had so many wrong answers on it that I really feel that you boys and Miss Hawes should be penalized $10 through courtesy of Canada Dry.
Miss Hawes ought to pay it.
Yes, I think Miss Hawes knew the answers all along, just being coy. Thank you. All right, what can you do with this one? Comes from Mr. Richard E. Smith of Hollis, Long Island. Mr. Smith wants you to quote a line which mentions each of the following beverages. The first is ale. You keep out of this, Mr. Cross. The first is ale. Mr. Adams.
All my days I'll sing the praise of Brown October Ale.
Yes, that's a very good line. Who wrote it, you know? I don't.
Harry
I don't.
B. Smith.
Is that true, Harry B. Smith? All right, it's all right with me.
In Robin Hood.
Very good. That's one. Now, quote a line which mentions beer. Which mentions beer. Mr. Stokes.
Beer, here, here, beer. Opening lines of a song.
Opening lines of what?
A song.
A song? Who
very
wrote
popular
it?
Song.
Mr. You? Adams, Harry B. Smith write that one?
No.
Edgar Smith, maybe.
All right, I'll let that one go. That's beer. How about wine? Very famous one about wine. I think we all know. Mr. Kieran?
Drink to me only with thine eyes, and I'll not ask for wine.
Yes, that's a very good one. Another one from Omar Khayyam that I think is familiar to most of the audience. Mr. Adams, let's have that one. Don't know that one?
A jug of wine.
Yes, well, you're rather penurious. A loaf of bread, a jug of wine, and thou. Don't forget the thou. Rye. Mr. Kieran had his hand up at once on that one.
Well, all right.
All right, Mr. Kieran.
If the laddie kissed the lassie coming through the rye.
Yes, coming through the rye, very good. Or perhaps the simple poetic line.
Sing a song of sixpence, yes. A pocket full of rye.
Yes, or simply make mine rye, which is the one I've heard very frequently. Fifth and last, milk. Milk. Mr. Self.
The milk of human kindness.
Yes, comes from what source? Mr.
Not
Kieran.
Macbeth.
Oh, no. They're working out pretty well between them. Yet I do fear thy nature, it is too full of the milk of human kindness for Macbeth. Very good. Now, the next one has to do with birds. But I think that the rest of us ought to be able to get into this, as well as Mr. Kieran, who is an expert on birds. This comes from Mr. R.H. Henley of Norwich, New York. Mr. Henley wants you to identify the birds suggested by the following musical compositions, which are going to be played by the pianist. Now, I don't know whether all these birds, Mr. Kieran, are birds that live east of the Hudson or west of the Hudson, but here we go. Let's have the first. Mr. Adams.
Mockingbird.
Yes, what is the name of the whole composition? It's just part of which is
Listen to the Mockingbird.
Listen to the Mockingbird. Very pretty. All right, let's have the second.
Robin.
Robin is right. And you know what the name of the song is?
Something about the Red, Red Robin.
That's very good. The Red, Red Robin comes bobbing along. Did you know that, Mr. Kieran?
Yes, I can sing it.
Not here, you can't. Oh, no.
That proves nothing.
That's just optimism on your part, Mr. Kieran. Let's have number three. Mr. Kieran. Ah, the bird.
The owl and the pussycat.
The owl and the pussycat went to sea. All in a...
Pea green bowl.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Kieran. Let's have number four. Miss Hawes, I've never seen anyone look as abstracted as
you. I've never heard a bit of music.
And you don't know anything about birds either?
No.
You'll come back. You watch. Mr. Kieran?
I forget the author, but I think that's a very nice piece called The Swan.
Yes, The Swan is quite right. I forget the author, too. Mr. Seldes, do you know the author?
It's a very good author.
I haven't the slightest doubt.
It ought to be Sibelius, but it probably isn't.
I don't remember. It's probably somebody very, very good. We can have him on next week. Let's have number five. Number five.
Stephen Foster wrote that.
Wrote The Swan?
Wrote The Swanee River.
Oh, Mr. Adams. How long do you think you can last during that sort of thing? Let's have five. Miss Hawes, do you know that? No? Gee whiz, I know
turkey?
That one myself. Yeah, Turkey, what's the song?
In the Straw.
Turkey in the Straw, and let's have another one. I think there might be another one on the pianist rack there. Mr. Kieran.
The Jailbird.
Very good, man. Christmas song, of course. I think you did pretty well on birds. The next one from Mr. Walter R. Marsden of Bronx, New York. Mr. Marsden wants you to identify these four noted equestrians, as he puts it, horsemen, you might say, four noted equestrians. One, he raised an awful rumpus in the middle of the night. He woke up lots of people, and they all came out to fight Mr. Stokes.
William Dawes rode at the same time and was not captured as Mr. Revere was.
Say, that's an interesting
thing. That's been real on, Mr. Kieran.
Very, very good. I'm glad to get
any
that.
Any child knows that.
Name me another child that does.
That's why Mr. Stokes got it so easily, Mr. Adams. Two, he wore no hat for reason that he had no place to wear one. And if one met him on the road, he sure enough would scare one. Mr. Adams.
Ichabod Crane.
I don't think so.
The Headless Horseman.
Ah, yes, but you said Ichabod Crane. What was the name of the Headless Horseman in Washington Irving's story? Mr. Kieran.
Brom Bones.
Yes, we ought to give you about half credit on that, Mr. Adams. Pretty good. Three. His cry rings loud upon the air. He rides through storm and strife. He foils foul villains everywhere to sell the staff of life. You want me to read that again? You want me to sing it?
No.
His cry rings loud upon the air. He rides through storm and strife. He foils foul villains everywhere to sell the staff of life. I'm sorry, Miss Hawes and gentlemen. The answer is The Lone Ranger, advertising Silver Cup Bread. This free advertisement for Silver Cup Bread comes to you through the courtesy of Canada Dry. Fourth and last, to lift the tax, to lift the tax throughout the land, she set a style for Sally Rand. All right, Mr. Kieran.
Lady Godiva.
Lady Godiva is quite correct, yes, that's right. We got 2.5 right out of 4, and that, I'm afraid, is going to cost Canada Dry $10. Thank you. Going out to Mr. Morris. Well, now, let's see. We seem to be down about $30, and we ought to give the brain cells a short vacation. And while the experts are resting on their laurels, get off those laurels, Mr. Adams, eh? Our fifth expert, Mr. Milton Cross, has something up his sleeve for us.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. Several weeks ago, I told you that when you buy Canada Dry, you should know the reasons why it has come to be known as the champagne of ginger ales. One reason is that Canada Dry maintains a resident buyer in Jamaica, where most of the world's finest ginger is grown. Our buyer constantly watches the markets, ready to purchase only grade A ginger. But his work doesn't finish then, because he must personally supervise the curing, packing, and shipping of these valuable crops. Another important reason is the exclusive process employed by Canada Dry to extract all the rich goodness of this premium ginger. For the process we use retains all the delightful essence, flavor and aroma of choice Jamaica ginger. So the next time you want a cool, refreshing drink, pour yourself a glass of Canada Dry. You'll find it aids digestion, refreshes inwardly, and picks you up. Or in a word, it's gingivating.
That's a nice piece of indoctrination, Mr. Cross. Took me 57 seconds. And now back to our inquisition. Mr. Joseph S. Peterson, Jr. of New Orleans, Louisiana, sends us the following. You know that certain famous people have become identified with particular articles of clothing in history. For example, a cape would suggest whom?
Don Juan.
Don Juan, Miss Hawes, yes. Quite right. Perhaps even more notably, Miss Kieran?
Hendrik Willem van Loon.
A cape? Well, he looks more like a peninsula rather than a cape, I think. No, I think it would suggest Sir Walter Raleigh to a great many of us. Mm-hmm. Of course, Don Juan, very good, Miss Hawes, a very classic example. Now, the object of this question is to dress up a man by borrowing each article of clothing from the famous person whom it suggests. And we'll start from the top and we'll go down. One, a hat. Miss Hawes.
Lucius Beebe. What do you mean?
Lucius Beebe, a hat, yes, a high silk hat, conceivably.
A high gray hat, as we saw in life.
A high gray hat, yes, yes. How high is that hat?
Oh, it's very high.
Very high. It makes Mr. Beebe a very, very big man, I think.
Definitely.
Yes. I think we might think of someone else. Perhaps less elegant than Mr. Beebe. Mr.
Less
Selden.
Elegant in style, a brown hat.
A brown derby, yes. Al Smith, yes. Very good. Now we've got our man dressed as far as a hat is concerned. A coat. Miss Hawes.
Chesterfield.
Yes, Lord Chesterfield. And perhaps another that one might think of. I think it's used as a morning coat sometimes.
Prince Albert.
Prince Albert. Sorry. Thank you very much, Mr. Selden. And after Prince Albert, of course, as you can tell, very easily. Three, now let's see. We'll better get a shirt on this man, a shirt. Mr. Selden.
The man that lost his in 1929.
Yes, might be almost anybody. Famous man.
Pretty anonymous,
man,
but...
Man everybody knows.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can tie the shirt on, however, to a single personality whom we can name.
Stiff.
I beg pardon? Stiff? Mr. Stiff? Mr. Stiff shirt? No, I don't think so.
Mr. Stuffed.
Oh, I can think of several people offhand who are associated with shirts. Mr. Adams.
Thomas Hood.
Who wrote the song of the shirt. Yes, yes.
It's the closest I can come.
Now, how about Garibaldi and the famous red shirts of Garibaldi? Or
Mr. Mussolini.
Mr. Mussolini, the black shirts. Yes, Mr. Hitler, the brown shirts. The entire laundry brigade, as a matter of fact. All right, that fixes us up with a shirt. Now, we'd better... This man looks still rather badly dressed. We'd better fit a collar on him. How about a collar? Mr. Selvig, do you have something...
Thomas... No, I want to give you the collar. I knew I had to give it to him. Thomas Brackett Reed, who was the Speaker of the House and who said, I wear no man's collar. And as his size was about 18 and a half, they said he probably was wearing a horse collar. But that is a celebrated phrase of his.
I'm sure that's true. Never heard of it before. I'll accept that as
if you'll
very...
accept Reed as...
Yes, I'll accept it. I'm sure you're right, Mr. Selvig. Do you have another one, Mr. Adams?
Lord Byron.
Lord Byron, yes. Of course, the famous open collar. What did you...
Another Lord. Little Lord Fauntleroy.
Little Lord Fauntleroy, yes. The Lords do run the collar.
Lord, Lord.
Oh, Mr. Adams.
Massive.
Now, let's see. Let's run down a bit, see what we can do about putting a pair of shoes on our man. A pair of shoes. Mr. Kieran.
Blucher.
I beg pardon?
Blucher.
Blucher, yes. The famous general.
Who came.
And did what? To whom? At what time?
Scored a KO over... Kid Napoleon.
Kid Napoleon, yeah. At Waterloo. Another very famous person is associated with shoes.
Yes, sir.
I beg pardon, Mr. Kieran?
Wellington.
Wellington shoes. Yes, Wellington boots. I beg your pardon. Wellington boots. All right, now let's put a pair of gloves on our well-dressed man. Pair of gloves. Name a famous person associated with gloves. This is perhaps the only hard one. Mr. Adams.
Gene Tunney.
Gene Tunney? I think I'll let that go. Yes, Gene Tunney, very good. Do you have another one, Mr. Sellers?
The gentleman who threw his glove, but not with love, right in his lady's face. An ungracious character.
From a poem, no doubt.
Poem, yes.
Yes, I gathered that much from the way you were saying it.
Yeah, I have a marvelous way of speaking poetry.
Do
you want me to recite something else?
I beg your pardon?
I'll recite something else.
No, that's enough. That's enough. I was thinking of Clemenceau, who, you remember, at least during the latter part of his life, always wore rather sinister black gloves, I think. It always used to scare me when I used to see him photographed with the black gloves. Now, have we got our man thoroughly dressed?
Definitely not.
No. In fact, what we are lacking, his pants.
Yes.
His pants. How about pants? They don't have necessarily to be creased. Mr. Adams.
The history of the Knickerbockers.
Well, it's going pretty far afield, Mr. Adams. I don't know.
As pants the heart.
Gee whiz. I can think of a famous actor.
But Bob Brummel doesn't count, I suppose.
No, I don't think it'll count Bob Brummel, though. Thank you very much for bringing him up. Nice of you, Miss Hall.
Clifton Webb.
Clifton Webb wears pants.
We're known for a startling way of wearing
pants. Oh, he does. Oh. All right, I'll let Clifton Webb get in. Charlie Chaplin, I think, is associated with baggy pants and minds most of us. Mr. Sellers, you're an authority on the Seven Lively Arts. You should have thought of Mr. Chaplin, don't you think?
I should.
Yes, that's right. Well, we've got him quite dressed, except for an umbrella. Mr. Chamberlain's umbrella, perhaps, which we just saved for a rainy day. All right. What can you do with this one? Mr. Jerome Weston of Washington, D.C., wants you to describe briefly the situation on the stage that leads up to the following songs. There are three of them, and they're going to be sung by our Canada Dry expert, Mr. Milton Cross. Now, the first is it's from La Tosca, Mr. Cross.
Carezze, mentre offre mente le belle forme di schiavi e or dai veli.
Thank you. The experts are enjoying that, but otherwise there's not a single sign of it. All right.
Hasn't the lady finally escaped from the clutches of the foul Scorpio? That is before the end. And agreed that she will marry the young painter. And is she not singing about the sweetness of a kiss?
I don't think so, no. I think it's the tenor, Mario Cavaradossi, who...
He's singing about the sweetness
of a
kiss.
He's about to be executed, yes.
Kiss and death.
Which is very understandable.
That's the end of the show.
Some of the tenors I've heard, yes. So I don't think that's quite the same. He's about to be executed, and he sings that very lovely song. Now let's have the second song, which is Wintergreen for President.
Wintergreen for President. Wintergreen for President.
Mr. Adams, describe the situation leading up to that song.
It's the opening of
That's all. I'm with you, Mr. Adams, all the way.
The Kaufman Riskin play that got the Pulitzer Prize.
Yes. Maybe you want to spell it for us. Of the I Sing. That's the opening of the I Sing. But what is the situation associated in your mind with that? Do you remember the way the
what would amount to a torchlight parade.
Oh, not what would amount to it. It is a torchlight parade, Mr. Adams. It's a
with transparency.
Parade. The opening of the I Sing. Very good. That's right. And the third, Ridi Pagliacci, Mr. Cross. All right, thank you very much, Miss Cross. Mr. Kieran.
Well, he comes out on the scene.
Who?
Pagliaccio comes out on the scene, and they have a wagon in which he dresses himself up, and he finds that his girlfriend, Columbine, has gone off with Arlecchino, and he wanders up and down the stage singing that song.
Yes, what is the song in English?
The song in English...
not the whole thing.
Well, it's...
What's the phrase which is most famous?
Laugh, clown, laugh.
All right. Well, that's right. Laugh, clown, laugh. Very good. That's the situation. We got 2 out of 3, which is not enough, I'm awfully sorry to say. So Canada Dry is down another $10 going to Mr. Weston of Washington, D.C. Thank you. Now let's see if we can get part of this next question answered. The following authors were all homesick, and they expressed their longings in poetic form. Name the place for which each sighed, and give the title of the poem or the line which names the place. I think we'll have time for only one or two of these. Kipling. Mr. Sellers.
Mandalay.
Road to Mandalay. Somewhere east of Suez. Browning. Mr. Kieran.
Ode to be in England.
Very good. Masefield. Yes, Mr. Adams.
The Sea.
Yep, the Sea. George M. Cohan. Mr. Kieran.
45 minutes from Broadway.
John Howard Payne.
Home Sweet Home.
Very good. Thank you very much indeed. Canada Dry announces a total loss now of $40. That's all we'll have time for tonight. In a moment, I'll give you the lineup for next week at this time. But in the meantime, Mr. Cross has a word to say.
A colloquial corruption of an old maxim tells us that all work and no play makes Jack. Be that as it may, we believe that a brand new game to play is always welcome in every home. And that's why we urge you to send for your copy of the Information Please game, which you can play at home just as we do here in the studio. And now I'm going to tell you how you can get your copy of this brain-teasing game. Tear off the labels from 2 bottles of any of Canada Dry's many beverages. The labels don't have to be perfect, so don't worry if you've torn the corners. Then mail both your labels or pieces of labels and 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York. If you live in Canada, the address is Canada Dry, Toronto, Canada. Every home needs this Information Please game, so you'd better send for your copy tonight. And along with your 2 labels and 10 cents, don't forget your own name and address.
Thanks, Mr. Cross. Next week at this time, our regulars, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Levant, and Mr. Adams, will be on deck. And we've got an extra special novelty. Don't crowd, but listen closely. Our fourth man may or may not be an expert. At any rate, he hopes to be. His name's Myron Wallace. He comes from Brookline, Massachusetts. And he's a member of the 1939 class of the University of Michigan. He's one of their brightest boys, we understand, and they've selected him as a possible expert of the future. He's coming east to pit his youthful brain, particularly against that of the venerable Franklin P. Adams, Michigan 03. Be on hand next Tuesday to witness the battle between the expert of today and the expert to be, the battle between the generations. And remember, letters with questions ought to be addressed to Information Please, Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Canada Dry, ginger ale, sparkling water, lime Ricky, and Tom Collins mixer come in convenient-sized bottles for every occasion. These exceptionally fine beverages are economical, too. For the largest bottle, the family size, costs only 15 cents plus usual deposits. This is Milton Cross saying good night to Canada Dry.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.